Looking to catch up on Nigerian news you may have missed during the week? Or you need a refresher? Join the team of Weekend Nigeria, Top Star and AYEMI Olivia on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Saturday, as we deliver news, reviews, interviews, tidbits, music, and so much more. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians and diaspora up to speed. Weekend Nigeria, Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians and diaspora up to speed. Today we'll be speaking with Dr. Kemi Babagbimi, the Assistant Professor of Clinical Radiology in the Weill Cornell Medical College, New York. Dr. T. Kemi Babagbimi earned her BSc degree summa cum laude from Georgia State University, Atlanta, GA, in 1994. She was awarded her MD degree from Harvard Medical School, Boston, Massachusetts, in 1998. Dr. Babagbimi was an intern 1998 to 1999 at the Cambridge Hospital, Harvard Medical School, Cambridge, Massachusetts. She received her radiology residency training 1999 to 2003 in diagnostic radiology at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, MA. Dr. Babagbimi was elected chief radiology resident in 2001 to 2002. She remained at the Brigham and Women's Hospital for additional training in women's imaging and emergency radiology. Dr. Babagbimi achieved board certification in diagnostic radiology from the American Board of Radiology in 2003. In December 2006, Dr. Babagbimi joined the full-time faculty at Weill Cornell Medical College. She is currently an assistant professor of clinical radiology. She's an assistant attending radiologist at New York Presbyterian Hospital, Weill Cornell campus. Her clinical interests are in women's imaging, mammography, breast ultrasound, breast MRI, ultrasonography, including obstetrical and gynecological ultrasound, emergency radiology, and cross-section body imaging. She is a member of the Emergency Radiology Division and Weill Cornell Imaging at NYP, our multitude outpatient imaging practice. Dr. Babagbimi is very active and involved in teaching radiology residents and medical students. She is currently the course director for the Weill Medical College Introduction to Clinical Imaging course, RAD-104NY, and an assistant program director at the radiology residency. Prior to joining Weill Cornell, Dr. Babagbimi was an attending radiologist at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and the Dana Faber Cancer Institute in both ultrasound and breast imaging departments. Dr. Babagbimi was board certified in diagnostic radiology in 2003. We'd like to welcome you to the program. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Please tell us about yourself and what you do.
Okay. So I am many things to different people. So in no particular order, I'm a mother. I'm a wife. I'm a person of a very deep and abiding faith. And probably what I'm most commonly known for is the fact that I'm a radiologist. So I work in an academic institution, which means I have a role in the educating of future medical doctors, and I practice a field which is predominantly involved in using imaging to diagnose medical conditions, and this is what I do for most of my time in medicine.
What made you choose that specialty in medicine? I mean, it's not something that, yes, we know that there's radiology, but it's not something that we hear a lot about. I mean, unless somebody breaks a leg in Nigeria or breaks a hand, I mean, so why radiology?
So I felt very lucky that when I went to medical school, I got to be exposed to all different kinds of specialties of medicine. And I certainly never heard of radiology until I probably was a third year medical student, the radiologists were involved in the teaching of anatomy. So people who are drawn heavily to anatomy and drawn to imaging and are very curious sort of problem solvers do well in my specialty, because my specialty involves all the subspecialties in medicine, but puts them into a well-distilled form where, for me, I'm using images to guide and to give answer to a patient's problems. So as soon as I saw that, it clicked with everything that I liked. I'm very visual. I like to solve mysteries and I like to give people an answer. So if there's an answer on a picture that can tell you why your stomach hurts or why you have pain in the right part of your abdomen or why you're having heavy bleeding, I feel like it's a very tangible get for me. I've given you an answer. I can place an image and I can tell the story from it. And more importantly, I can guide your physicians as to how to best treat you. And I can also see if the treatment is working. So from diagnosis to treatment and follow-up of management of the patient, for me, the radiologist has an integral role. And it's very different, I must admit, how this specialty is developed here in the United States versus other parts of the world, where most of what I may do may be incorporated into the specialties, the larger predominant specialties. So totally acknowledge that. But here it's a full field on its own with at least 12 distinct sub areas of specialization. And I spend my time. It could be more now, I don't even know, since I graduated. But I spend most of my time focused on women's imaging and women's health. So my fellowship training is in, you know, things like mammography, OBGYN ultrasound, pelvic imaging, and I also have additional training in emergency radiology. So I can look at different acute things that present through the emergency department that are general. So both male, female, and children as well. So I feel like I have the best of all worlds. So I get to sort of not be limited in my scope, but also be specialized in some areas as well.
Oh, wow. You know, from the outside in, I'm feeling like, you know, if I were young, I would probably just go and read that. Because, I mean, the way you're talking, I'm also quite visual. So I'm looking at x-rays in a completely different light.
Absolutely.
It's not just showing, because in my mind, it had always been, it shows you the bone structure and that's it. But I mean, you've talked about stomachs, you've talked about bleeding, you've talked about, I mean, it's huge.
Yes.
And
yes,
it's to diagnose and treat and maintain through those images. That is amazing. Yes, wow, it is, you're it is, definitely love have a boring day.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get more Black people, even in the United States, there are not enough of us who are in this specialty. So I'm trying to get us more and more interested because we impact patients' care at every point in the game when they interface with medicine. So I feel like it's an important specialty for there to be truly representation of Black women and Black persons and other groups so that we can be more focused on things that affect us and be a face for our patients. Most people think radiologists don't see patients. I see patients every day. So my patients know me. They can write me. They can call me. I'm in the room with them during the ultrasound. So I absolutely, for me, what I'm doing is exactly what I was meant to be doing.
I agree with that. So why is it that, because you said something about Black, you're trying to get more Black people into the field. Why are they running away from the field? Is it a lack of understanding or what do you think is the problem?
It's a very complex thing in the United States. So in the United States, because of a history of racism and a lot of health disparities, very few Black people are in the field of medicine to start with. And of the Black people that are in the field of medicine, very few of them lack the exposure. Very few of them get the exposure to a field like radiology, because one of the myths that's out there is one, if you're going to be a Black or minority doctor, you should be doing something in the primary care field. You should only be doing family practice, OB-GYN, surgery. It's too technical for you. You shouldn't do it. This is too technologically advanced. But those things could not be further from the truth. If I can do it, anybody can do it. So people should be able to choose what they want to do. But many a times, they're not exposed to it. They're discouraged from doing it. And overall, there just are not many Black people in medicine to start with anyway. So it just means fewer people come down the pipeline for radiology. So it's complex in the United States, at least.
Okay, so knowing that you're a radiologist, and also knowing, I know the part that you played when COVID hit your city, and yes, I agree that the world wasn't prepared, but you guys seem to have done a rebound. How did you coordinate your functions when COVID hit your city? And how did you make that transformation or transition from being a radiologist to being an everyday doctor, so to speak?
Yeah. So, when COVID hit us, we were hit by an avalanche. We were not prepared at all. But I think what truly saved New York City is the fact that we had excellent public health officials. We had excellent infectious disease experts. When we also had leadership in form of the governor and sort of the local and community leaders who basically were able to immediately say, look, we have to listen to the science and we need to all work together as a team. So it all started from the top down. So if we didn't have the proper leadership on a government and state and local level, I think it would have been an even greater disaster than it was. And I often also credit the people of New York because I think immediately people started to think of more than just themselves. They started to think of everything as a we mentality. And so people were willing to sort of sacrifice everyday desires and needs just for the greater good. And it meant, oh yes, we're going to be shutting down the schools. We're going to stop going into work. We're going to have to limit our socialization. And I think because people were highly motivated for a common good and they had sort of the infrastructure of good leadership, it made everything sort of turn around for New York. It wasn't easy at all. It was a very long 3-month stretch from about March 15 to about May 15 before things started to turn the corner. And those days were by far the darkest days, both literally and figuratively, that I've experienced in my time in this country, in New York City. So I think the motivation of the people, the leadership, and the understanding that science has to be used for the betterment of people, all those combined for sort of a quick turnaround. And right now, New York is sort of in the phase 4 of opening, where we're opening things that are indoor type things, which are gymnasiums. And, you know, there's talks soon in the main city of maybe doing limited capacity for indoor restaurants. But everything has sort of been very slow and methodical and has been guided by science and appropriate leadership. And of course, keeping people informed. So everybody felt like, okay, whatever they're telling me, I as an individual, I'm part of the greater group of people. So whatever I do impacts more than just myself. So let's work on it together. So knock on wood, New York City has sort of been fortunate in that regard.
Okay, so I'm going to throw a home question at you. Now, being a Nigerian in the States, is this something that you see that Nigeria is capable of doing? In terms of, we've had kind of topsy-turvy leadership and our people, sometimes our minds are not there, but I know that Nigerians are resilient. I know that also we're highly intelligent. Do you see the medical scene in Nigeria changing for the good? It's improved a lot, even I must say.
Yes.
But do you see it changing for the greater good in a not too distant future?
Absolutely. I think, one of the things that is, and I'm certainly not an expert on this, but I feel that, you know, based on what I know of Nigerians, as you said, we were blessed with natural intelligence. We have the creativity. We have the hustle built into us. I think most of what we need might be just capital investments and infrastructure, because the will of the people, the intelligence, everything is already there. So I see no reason why, if this was something that we as a nation, and the we is not just the leaders, the people have to be motivated as well, because everything works when everybody's involved. So everybody has to be held accountable. Everybody has to feel like they are an important piece of whatever the final outcome will be. And so I see absolutely no reason why people who are so intelligent and so creative already and already have the hustle built into them, like they have it. It just needs that, you know, something, whatever that X factor is. Click together. The doctors in Nigeria, who are still in Nigeria and the doctors who are here who are Nigerian, there's absolutely no difference that I see. I think they can function in any setting that you put mm-hmm. them in. So I think infrastructure, capital investment, and the general will to improve upon what we have for the greater good should do it.
Okay, so I'm going to spring back to COVID now. How were you able to keep your team motivated? And your team must have grown during COVID. I mean, it must have grown from radiology to the whole emergency situation. How were you able to function efficiently and effectively, even though I know you've said some of that? And how were you able to keep your team together, motivated, day in, day out?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm one of the team. I'm not necessarily the leader of the team. Mm-hmm. So one of a group of about 150 radiologists in my department.
Wow.
And within the larger hospital context with thousands and thousands of doctors. But what the head of the hospital did was he immediately told us that everybody is interchangeable and everybody must be able to assume the roles to the best of their ability to cover for someone else. Because there was a terrible time between March and April 15 where people who were on the true front lines, the ICU doctors, the ER doctors and nurses, were actually getting sick and infected, and you just had to keep pulling people from any subspecialty. So for me as a radiologist, I'm not clinical in the sense where I know what happens in an ICU. So we were all terrified. So there was a mandatory deployment and everybody had to be ready to act in whatever capacity they were called to. But I think the idea that we knew we were there as a team, that it, you know, I didn't get deployed to the ICU, thank God. Because that would have been some story to tell again. I remained sort of supporting the front line by continuing to do my procedures, my diagnostic studies, and seeing patients, doing ultrasounds on them. But I think, you know, I knew I was working as part of a larger team, and all of us were one seamless unit. We had to be for the safety and benefit of all of our patients. And so people, again, I think I felt very lucky. People really were highly motivated to do something. People felt helpless against the virus. So the least of which they could do was to chip in and help their colleagues and chip in and call in and be backup. So yes, we all had fear because there was a time we didn't have enough protective equipment. I'm not gonna lie. But I think in general, most of us were eager to do something and be helpful. And so that was intrinsic in all of my team members, whether it was within or without radiology. Knock on wood, we didn't have any major issues with morale and things like that. It was hard, but people still came in and did what they had to do.
So what did you learn? What are your learnings from this experience, as in the whole COVID, the last few months, being able to pivot, so to speak? That's our favorite term in Nigeria now, pivot.
Oh, I use it too. Don't worry. You always have to be able to pivot. That shows flexibility. So I learned many things in no particular order. I learned that there's power in people working together for the greater good of many. When people put their minds to doing something, because it's just bigger than themselves, there's much that can be achieved. I learned also that fear is powerful, but not that powerful that you can't reapply faith repeatedly to dash it down. And so for many of us, being afraid was constant. But if you had something in your back pocket, you know, your faith was something you could use to constantly bash it down and just say, you know, I've got to keep going. No, I'm covered. I'm fine. I'm not going to be afraid. I'm going to do it. Faith was greater than fear could ever be. I also learned gratitude because I relearned it, I should say. I've tried to always be grateful. But when you realize the things that you take for granted not being available to you as easily as it was with COVID-19, I think you learn to be grateful on multiple points during the day, during the course of the month. So I would find myself repeatedly saying, thank God I made it through this day. Thank God nobody I know got sick. Thank God somebody didn't die today. Thank God we're all able to be indoors. Thank God we have food. Thank God we have shelter. Because these things were taken away very quickly by a largely invisible virus for so many people. And still till this day, even though we think of the United States as a very rich country, there's so many disparities based on race and socioeconomic lines that many people are homeless because of this virus. Many people are hungry because of this virus. And so I got to sort of reiterate to my children every day the necessity to be grateful for every day, every small thing, which end up not being that small at all. They're actually quite huge. I think also I learned that science and faith can go together. So you must be very astute in your understanding of how faith works, but you should not discount science because they were perfectly designed by a creator to work together for the good of many. And so those were sort of my large lessons. I'm sure there are a lot more, but those are the ones that sort of immediately come to mind for me.
I do agree on the faith and science because, I mean, the simplest explanation for me is God made the human being and he put the brain in the human being. So he gave him the access to go and do that science. So, I mean, it must be able to work together. Don't dump one for the other. Just find a good balance and move on. I do agree.
We Can Nigeria and Spirit of Nigeria Radio bringing Nigerians and diaspora up to speed. We're speaking with Dr. Kemi Babagbemi, an assistant professor of clinical radiology at the Weill Cornell University College in New York. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Swimming against the current, swimming against the current. I think I need you, I need you. Trying so hard to finish, trying so hard to finish. Strong, but I need you, I need you. I'm trying to make sense of it, trying to make sense of it all, but I can't, and that's the truth. Cause you're all I've ever needed, you're all I've ever needed, but I don't know the truth. Oh, you are my star, you show me the way back to you. You are my star, brighten my gray and make my sky blue. You are the light in my dark. Without you, my world would be so empty, empty. You fill the space in my heart. Please don't leave me feeling so empty, empty. Yeah.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
I'm swimming against the current, swimming against the current. I think I need you, I need you. I'm trying so hard to finish, trying so hard to finish. Strong, that I need you, I need you. Trying to make sense of it, trying to make sense of it all, but I can't, and that's the truth. Cause you're all I've ever needed, you're all I've ever needed, and I don't know the truth.
You are my star,
show me the way back to you.
You are my sun,
sky blue. You are the light in my dark. Without you, my world would be so empty. Empty. You fill the space in my heart. Please don't leave me feeling so empty. Empty. I really need a miracle. I really need a miracle. Tell me, is that you? Is that you? I really need a miracle. I really need a miracle. Tell me, is that you? Oh, I really need a miracle. I really need a miracle. Tell me, is that you? Is that you? Back to you. You are my sun. You brighten my gray and make my sky blue. You are the light in my dark. Without you, my world would be so empty. Empty. Please fill the space in my heart. Please don't leave me feeling so empty, so empty.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Baby, you should know that I've been thinking of things you do. Every word you say makes me want to rise and never fall again. Girl, you make me want to sing. I wanna see my life, I gotta do it now. It doesn't matter how it turns out to be. It's burning in my heart, making me go mad. It doesn't matter how it turns out to be. Oh,
of Nigeria Radio.
How you style your hair, worry about all the clothes you wear, worry about what the people care,
worry about everything,
worry about the kind of car you drive, worry about living that fancy life, you worry about all the things to buy to make you beautiful. All these things go matter. Ego make me love you more. Girl, you need to learn to love who you. For me, too big, too short, too slim, too tall. Maybe you cannot have it all. I wish that you would come to your senses. All these things go matter.
Shine every day. Oh, yeah. Number touch me, covered by grace. Now Baba upgrade me. I celebrate. Hey. I thank you, cause you keep on blessing me.
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 Thank you, cause you keep on blessing me.
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 Keep on blessing me. Thank you, cause you keep on blessing me.
We don't want no drama, we don't want. But if you try to jam me, you will jump palava. And if you try to harm me, you will never prosper. I say you will never prosper. They don't know the way and they don't know the how. But more, you should know this by now. And if you're feeling me, then you can sing it loud. Sing it loud.
Will you lift up your voice and when people see me, they ask me, say, what thing they make me shine every day? Now, Baba, upgrade me, I elevate. I elevate. I elevate. Surround me, them done dead. Them nothing touch me, covered by grace. Now Baba upgrade me. I celebrate. I thank you, cause you keep on blessing me.
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 Thank you, cause you keep on blessing me.
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 She keep on blessing me. Do you like what you see? No need to they jealous me. It's Baba God blessing me. I go lift up my voice and sing. And do you like what you see? No need to they jealous me. It's Baba God blessing me. Thank you, cause she keep on blessing me.
Keep on blessing me.
Keep on blessing me. She keep on blessing me.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to
hey!
Yeah.
But if you shoot, na me go score.
Yeah, 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 no say. Bad man, the king, no. Everywhere I go, they put the music, repeat, no. No be lying, no be lying. I'm doing good, my brother.
Now I'm staring down the scraper, looking down on all the haters.
Hey.
Nigeria on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians and diaspora up to speed. Welcome back to the interview with Dr. Kemi Babagbimi, Assistant Professor, Clinical Radiology, Well Cornell College, New York. We're speaking about her life and times working in diaspora and also about her experiences during the COVID outbreak in New York. As we all know, New York was seriously hit, like most states or most nations or most countries. And she's telling us about how they were able to coordinate their activities properly.
Okay, so if you were to come back home to Nigeria, because I know you've been out for a very long time, what would you like to see put in place, especially in your professional and then maybe in your home life?
Yeah. You know, so I always make sure I'm not an expert on this. So I've been away so long that I don't even know what living everyday life in Nigeria is. So I always defer back to that there's not going to be anywhere that's going to be perfect for me. Every place I go to will have its own intrinsic problems, limitations of existence and things of that sort. So just as I would say for where I am currently, I would apply to Nigeria that, you know, no matter what the station of your birth and the conditions of your birth circumstances, that things should be in place so that you have equal access to things like basic education, basic health, and a chance to sort of live to your maximum potential wherever you are, and that there's fairness and equity in the distribution of resources so as to get you there. Mm-hmm. So my dream for Nigeria is similar to my dream for this country, because as perfect as the United States looks on paper, it's still a work in progress. I think there just has to be more people than not who have a understanding of the problems and have a greater commitment overall.
Well said. Okay, so I was going to say, you know, you've already told me what the Nigeria of your dream is, so that's fine. So we get it. So in the, I know you've talked about this stuff before we started recording. So I'd like you to reiterate that. We were talking about good of Nigerians, and you had said that in the medical field, for instance, Nigerians are kind of top of the bar. If there's anything happening anywhere and there's a commendation, the person is most likely a Nigerian.
I think as a general rule, and this, you know, you can Google this if you want, we are recognized as the most educated immigrant group in the United States. And just from my own anecdotal experience, with only about 4 to 6% of Black physicians out of total, a huge percentage of them, and I don't know the exact number, end up being Nigerian. So whenever there's anything major going on, and I hope the other Africans don't get mad at me, I just automatically think that's going to be a Nigerian, you know? So it's just the way I see it. And it's, you know, more times
than not,
out of 10, it usually is a Nigerian. And so we have that reputation in medicine that we highly educated. People always tell me, I don't know any Nigerian family where there's not an MD, a PhD, a lawyer, an accountant, a teacher. It's like, you guys just accumulate degrees. And I just try and tell them, it's just, you know, it's in our DNA. We're just naturally driven people. We're curious, and education was a fundamental thing in sort of the society in which I grew up in Nigeria. So it's not surprising to me if I see somebody with two PhDs, you know, that's what it was. So not bragging, I think I would love to see the exact numbers, but I think Nigerians are hugely respected in the field of medicine.
I think I'm going to research that, but in the last few weeks that I've been on radio, every week there's some Nigerian in some part of the country who's been awarded this or who's been given that or who's been promoted to do this. I'm like, wow, woo, that, you know, we are just, it shows that we can do so much more. You know, we don't have to wait for those who are out of the country. We could also apply those principles and turn our country around.
Absolutely. You know? I think there's nothing different intrinsically about the people who are physicians here and the people who are physicians in Nigeria. There's the same level of motivation, talent, intelligence, and sort of ingenuity. I think it just has to do with the circumstances in which they have to practice. Again, the capital investment in all the things they need to do, and sort of an infrastructure that already exists around them may be the limiting factor. But intrinsically, the Nigerian doctors who come here and do stuff here and vice versa, I mean, I don't see a difference. And somebody can challenge me in that, but I think it's all intrinsic. They have the capability and they can do just about anything they want.
Do anything. So I'm going to ask this, and it might be a bit uncomfortable for you to answer, but being that you've been away for so long, was being a Nigerian, especially a Nigerian in the field of medicine that you do, was it ever a stumbling block for you? Were there any, I mean, people just looked at you as a human being, or did people first look at you as a Nigerian? Because I hear a lot of that. I mean, I live in Nigeria, I don't live abroad. So when people are talking about, I'm thinking, no, they will look at you as a human being first and then think where you're from next. But I hear that sometimes that's not true.
Yeah. So
have you come across any of those kind of, you know, isms at all?
Oh, there's definitely isms in the United States and in medicine. The biggest ism is not whether I'm, you know, African or Nigerian. The biggest ism is the one that's most visible. I'm Black. So racism. So there's a lot of macro open aggression to you being in the field and microaggressions ongoing for you to be a woman and a Black woman in medicine. So, this country may be this many years old, 400 or some, whatever, but it still hasn't moved from that. So I encountered a lot of resistance to me going to medicine, a lot of discouragement when I even specified which area of medicine I would go into, again, because they felt, nope, you don't belong in that technologically advanced specialty. You should do XYZ, whatever XYZ was in their head. So, and they still occur till this day. So the fact that, you know, over the number of Black men in medicine hasn't changed over, you know, 30 to 40 years in this country is a direct result of racism and the fact that there's systemic literal blockades in the way of getting people to advance through the system. And so when people first encounter me, there's always like, oh, you're my doctor. oh, you're a radiologist. So there's always a lot of O's. I thought somebody, okay. I'm like, no, it's just me. How are you? Let's go. So not specifically because I was Nigerian. It's more specifically because I am Black in the system that is still very prejudiced against people of color.
Well, we can't change everybody's mind now, can we? So we'll just do the best we can and move along. Okay, so I can't believe I've gone through all the questions that I have for you. I'm having so much fun. So I have just one more, so to speak.
Okay.
What do you do to keep it all together? So, I mean, when you've gotten to that point where you've had it up to here, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, you know what? This far and no farther. What do you do? What's your favorite thing to do?
It all depends on the day. So first of all, I don't know if I have it all together. So that's number one. So nobody seems to have it all together, at least not at every point in time. So to keep the illusion that I have it all together, I say, I tell people, you know, I spend a lot of time talking to my family. Mm. You know, I have lots of siblings, so I can easily pick up the phone and just say something and vent to them. Mm. You know, my husband and my children, I try and spare them, because if I did it every day, I think they would run away from me. But I spend good family time with them, and I try and take my mind off, you know, things that would trouble me the most on that day. Mm. I spend a lot of time reading. I can read like 3-4 books at a time, which is very annoying to people who know me. No, I don't. I'm reading different parts at different times, so I never get far, you know. So it's like 4 books all listed, and I'm like different pages on different books. And then I listen to a lot of music, and most of all, I think I've been very fortunate to have some very good close friends that, you know, they know even when it looks like I'm doing okay, they still check up on me, because, you know, that's key, you know, friends, family, you know, those are the basic things. And I always have quiet time every morning. And I wake up pretty early, I tell people, and people sometimes on our group chat always go, why are you awake? I'm awake because it's my quiet time. It's mm-hmm. my space for meditation, for mm-hmm. prayer, for reflection, mm-hmm. for sort of realigning my thoughts to start, you know, over, because I feel like every day is a chance to do over. And so different parts of different things for different days and for different situations is how I keep that, you know, I'm doing okay, everything is okay. But those who know me know that sometimes it's not okay.
I know, we can't always be okay all the time now, can we?
Do what you can, minute to minute, day to day. Mm. Every sort of new day is a chance to do over or start again.
It is. Yeah. And I do agree with that quiet time in the morning. For me, once I miss that, it's like my day is going to be out the door, you know, and I can't get it back. So no matter what is happening around me, I also always try to do, I do that. And it's the first thing I do. So I know that, you know, whatever is coming at me, as they say in Yoruba, I am Igba. My chest is handling. But if I don't do that, I'm done for. So, of course, I'm a Nigerian, so I'm going to sneak in one more question. What's your favorite Nigerian food?
What's my favorite Nigerian food?
And do you still cook it, if you cook?
Okay, so that one is a very easy one, because, you know, somebody who we know very well in my group, I'm constantly making suya.
Oh, wow.
One thing that I still, in my mind, when I think of home, is in my head, and it's inbuilt into my senses. So people who know me, send me suya spice. I make suya like once a week. It's sort of like a stress. When I'm making, you know, probably I've had a lot of stress that day, and I start making it, I start marinating my meat. Hmm. Of course, it's not like the suya we got on the street,
but
my version. And I love suya. I will eat it 100 million times a day. And I'm still somebody who eats my food super spicy. So people come to my house, they're like, okay, this is typical Yoruba person. And we can't eat this one. So suya is my favorite. Wow. You know, I make it, it's a weekly thing. Wow. So all the other foods, yes, my mom may be the one who cooks it and sends it to me. But for me, given my life schedule, suya is very manageable and doable for me. And it's something I look forward to as my sort of reward for the week. And so if you know any good suya spices, send them my way.
So I was just going to say, so now I know what to send to you.
I love.
It's easy to get. So that now I know what to send to you. Oh, wow. I didn't see that coming at all. That was the last, thing at the back of my mind.
Yeah.
I'm
always sending random pictures of the ones I made to people. So you haven't gotten any, clearly. But it's just.
You need to send me some random pictures.
Yeah. It reminds me of home. Everything about it, from the smells and just because I did go to school in the north, and just going on the street and just buying the suya and wrapped in paper and watching the make it, all those things are sort of built into my memory at it's sort of my recreation of being at home, and it happens weekly.
Oh, Kemi, you have just been a dream. This you've just blown my mind with this interview.
Oh, you're so kind.
Honestly, you know.
Thank you for even including me. I'm one of out of thousands and thousands of people. So I'm really grateful that you even thought of me. And at least I've opened your eyes to what a radiologist is, nothing else.
Yes.
But thank you for thinking about me.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Looking to catch up on Nigerian news you may have missed during the week, or you need a refresher? Join the team of Weekend Nigeria, Top Star and Ayemi Olivia on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Saturday, as we deliver news, reviews, interviews, tidbits, music, and so much more. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians and diaspora up to speed.